Congressman Bill Flores joins us. Good morning, Congressman. How are you today?
Howdy, Scott. Great to be on the air with you today.
Let's talk, first of all, I guess, about the Senate has had wanted to vote. They've decided that they're not going to be able to vote on a repeal and replace of the Affordable Care Act. What's your view of what's going on right now?
Well, I think that it's kind of a replay of what happened in the House, except the House was more transparent in the way that we drafted the law, because we actually had hearings on it and had documentation as to, you know, all the input that we had received from all the stakeholders in the argument. The Senate drafted behind closed doors, and I think that turned out to be the biggest challenge for them. I was joking with some of my Senate colleagues last week that said, yeah, you guys got that box over from us that had health care reform in it, and you decide you're going to pull some things out, and you couldn't pull it. You'd say, oh, nope, we got to put it back. And then they'd say, well, we need to stick this new object in. You'd figure out that wouldn't fit. Because we've already been through all this. I wish they had just they'd paid a little more attention to our bill, because I think that's ultimately where they're going to wind up is because we've already battled all the internal battles between the ideological parts of the conservative wing versus the moderate wing of the Republicans in the House, and so they're going through the same thing in the Senate, so they should have just looked at our bill more closely.
So your party wants to have some sort of legislation in place. You want to be able to go back to your constituents and say, look, this is what the Republican Party was able to put together, and it's going to be okay for you. But at the end of the day, Senate's going to tinker around with this a little bit more. Then what happens? Do we go to a conference committee after that? What's the next step after the Senate is able to have some sort of legislation put together?
This is just my field, and it's at this point in time. So, you know, a lot could change between now and when the Senate actually does something. But my gut tells me that the Senate will come back with something that's close enough for the House to vote on as a standalone measure, instead of trying to go to conference to reconcile the two packages. I think that would take unnecessary time and would wind up with minimal improvement. And so I think in the interest of providing certainty and clarity for our constituents and our patients and our doctors and insurance companies, we need to go ahead and get something done by just voting on the Senate bill once they get it finished. And that's my current prediction as to what will happen.
Congressman Bill Flores joining us from D.C. Let's talk about action on the floor of the House. You know, the sanctuary cities question has become front and center in Austin, as now all the major cities in the state of Texas are opposing the legislation in Austin. You've got a bill there at the House, in the House, that y'all are going to look at. Is that right?
We actually have two, and I tell you what, I'm surprised by these larger cities that would vote against the protection of their own citizens for the benefit of, I don't know for what benefit. And so there are two bills on the floor this week. The first one's called the No Sanctuary for Criminals Act. It's House Resolution 3003, and it does a couple of things. One is it clarifies that ICE does have absolute detainer authority for folks that are in the country illegally. And then it also makes crystal clear that the federal government can withhold federal grants from jurisdictions that violate federal law by not complying with detainers. And then it also allows the victims of crime to sue the jurisdiction who failed to comply with the detainer. So if you had somebody murdered because of an illegal immigrant where there was a detainer order and the state or the city ignored the detainer, then they can be sued for failure to follow federal law and for the damage that happened to the person that got killed or otherwise a crime committed against them. Now, Kate's Law is H.R. 3004. It does two things. One is it enhances the penalties for deported felons that return to the United States so that they aren't free to roam the streets. And so what it says is if you have been picked up more than a certain number of times and deported and you wind up back here, then your penalties become much harsher. One of the other things we've seen a rash of illegal aliens involved in drunk driving accidents where people have gotten killed and hurt. And so it changes the law to say that if you're picked up as if you're here illegally and you're picked up for DWI, then you are subject to a detainer automatically, and so that the cities can't release these folks and then have them get back on the streets and kill somebody else.
And Kate, that's Catherine Steinle. That was the girl who was shot and killed a few years ago in San Francisco. That's where it gets its name.
Kate Steinle.
The Supreme Court had some rulings of interest this week. I'd like to get your thoughts there.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm loving the Gorsuch Court. They're starting to get it right. The first thing has to do with the president's proposed refugee pause. And, you know, as we said in my earlier interviews this year, the president has absolute authority to do this, and we knew he would win in court. And so SCOTUS essentially said that they affirmed that he has the authority to do it. And with a couple of minor exceptions, they lifted the stays that had come out of the lower courts over in California and out of the Ninth Circuit Court, which is that crazy liberal court on the left coast.
Uh-huh.
So they lifted the stay and said, okay, the president's order can go into effect, and then they'll have a full hearing on this in October when the court reconvenes.
Now, I think that...
There was also a second order. Sorry about
sure.
that. There was also a second order where the state of Missouri was trying to block funds from a church that was trying to improve their playground. And trying to claim separation of church and state.
Right.
And so the Supreme Court came up with the right decision on that to protect religious liberty.
Now, one of the things that they don't seem to be in a hurry to talk about, but I'm sure it could happen next session, that has to do with the drawing of congressional districts, which impacts you and everybody else in the House.
Correct. There are actually two cases that they'll be looking at, one from North Carolina and one from Wisconsin, that has to do with political gerrymandering. There are specific laws under the Voting Rights Act that talk about racial gerrymandering, but there is no law that talks about political gerrymandering. Nonetheless, some people have engaged in litigation that deals with political gerrymandering, and the court has said that they're going to pick that up. There are a bunch of claims that the Texas districts were politically gerrymandered to favor one party or the other. There's nothing in the Constitution or in the Voting Rights Act that prohibits political gerrymandering. That's always been the privilege of the party in power in the various states that draw the maps. And so this case will determine what happens in Wisconsin, North Carolina, and it will have an impact on what happens in Texas.
Finally today, I guess I want to circle back around to the Affordable Care Act, because I know some new numbers came out as far as Obamacare is concerned in Texas that were pretty troublesome.
Yes, you know, one of the interesting things is that Health and Human Services, when the Obama administration was in power, would not ever give the American people the real numbers on what was happening to premiums and out-of-pockets and coverages and so forth. But Tom Price, is Secretary of HHS now, has gone through a deep dive on what's really happened to the American healthcare insurance markets. And so for Texas, there's been an 82% increase in premiums since 2013. So your typical premium is $2,200 more than it was in 2013. And that's way different than the $2,500 premium decrease that President Obama had promised us under Obamacare. It also says that over 1 million families paid about $250 million in penalties in 2014. 94 counties had only one insurance choice in 2017. 86% of our counties had two or fewer choices, and eight insurers left the Texas marketplace, and that major insurer exits are expected this year. So we will likely wind up with about 70% of our counties having one carrier, and I'm thinking it looks like around 20% of our counties will have no insurance carrier options at all. So I kind of have to wonder what people are thinking when they call me and say, hey, we love the Affordable Care Act, we want you to keep it in place. I'm thinking, why? You've got no coverage from it. Your out-of-pockets have exploded, your premiums have exploded, and you've got no options. So why are you telling me it's so great? It's just unfixable.
Well, there's again, we see it every year. We're afraid to lift the page to see what the increase is going to be in our premium, and we would like some relief from you guys and gals if it's at all possible. Congressman,
yeah, that's the reason I'm hoping the Senate will hurry up and get something done so we can get it reconsidered over the House and then send it to the President.
Congressman Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. You can hear the interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. Wish you a happy 4th of July, and look forward to talking to you next week.
Happy Independence Day. Look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, thanks.